Remember No Child Left Behind? That was so 2002. Congress has approved, President Obama has signed, a successor to No Child Left Behind. It's Every Student Succeeds Act. That's the law. To discuss that in broad parameters, Tony Evers, Superintendent of Public Instruction, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate being here.
Well, I was intrigued by the research for this show. No Child Left Behind left in 2002.
Right.
Its goal, by 2014, 100% of students would be at grade level. How did we do as a nation with that?
Well, that was an aspirational goal, clearly. And I would say we're not there as a nation, that every child is succeeding at grade level. So, no, it hasn't worked. But I will say the law has some pretty good legacy, too.
Talk about what was good about No Child Left Behind. And not so good before we get to the ESSA.
Sure. Well, the good part was that it, for the first time ever, required states to look at different groups of kids separately as their achievement. So no longer could the majority, the white population, high test scores mask some underachievement. And so that really did bring about a new way of looking at achievement and how it impacts especially different subgroups like kids of color, kids that are economically disadvantaged, and so on. So I think that's a tremendous legacy, frankly. And it really has focused all states on closing achievement gaps, which is it's one of the most important things that our nation faces. So I think that's a great legacy.
What about on specifics? I mean, how have our SAT scores done under No Child Left Behind? You've been in this business a while.
They are not our SAT scores, but our state tests generally are trending upward.
Upward.
But slowly and not quickly enough. We continue to have high graduation rates. We're like third in the country or second in the country, depending on the measurement. So I think the trend line is good, but it's not good enough. But I think No Child Left Behind has caused us as a nation and us as a state to take a look at, so how are African-American kids doing? How are Hispanic kids doing? And really trying to focus our efforts where we need to really lift up some achievement.
One of the legacies of No Child Left Behind was decades of controversies over failing schools.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a debate in the future as we go forward under the Every Student Succeeds?
That's a great question. I think the reality is probably yes. I mean, the rhetoric around No Child Left Behind was, you know, if not all of the kids are making it, eventually 100% of your schools would be deemed failing. And then they morphed into the waiver process.
Yes.
And that kind of changed that a little bit. But I just think the reason I think it isn't necessarily going to change is it's part of the rhetoric now. And so no matter how we view it going forward, there will be some that view it as failing schools.
Do you see the debate over failing schools as one of the parts of No Child Left Behind that had the most problems?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean,
because one person's failing school is not another's failing school. Are there no certain specific standards, or why?
Well, you can't make a judgment like that based solely on a one test, one standardized test. But B, it also assumes that a failing school is failing every single student in all areas, which is just baloney. I mean, so that certainly was one of the downfalls of No Child Left Behind. And in addition, I think, you know, thinking back on it now, the one of the best reasons for passing this law is to kind of get states out of the, first of all, we are dealing with the federal government with No Child Left Behind as here's a new law, here's our regulation, so on and so forth. And then as they try to change the law and they didn't have any success, they went to this waiver process.
Right.
And it just cost.
And every state submitted its own waiver,
right?
Right. And they were signed off on by DOE, the Department of Ed, right?
Right. And the regulations kind of changed and things shifted over time. So it's good to have, we'll have at least a handful of years of consistency here. And I think that's a real positive thing for us.
One other part of No Child Left Behind, there was this race to the top, whereas if you submitted apps, you got additional money. Was that a good part of the national educational debate?
It one of the things Race to the Top did, it caused some states to kind of change some practice, such an educator effectiveness or educator evaluation in some other areas. So to cause states to think through that process, I think was a good thing. But it just, there was a lot of money on the table and a lot of time spent chasing that money.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't want to sound sour grapes. We didn't get a Race to the Top grant for K through 12. We got one for early childhood in subsequent years. But it was just a lot of work and a lot of preparation. I think overall the states that got the grants, I think it helped them as states to move their states forward. But did it drive changes all over the country? I'm not so sure that happened.
Okay, now let's look forward.
Sure.
The premises of Every Student Succeeds, is it more achievable? Do you welcome this change from No Child Left Behind to ESSA? And if so, why?
Number of reasons. One is, and I'll back up to the consistency piece, is that now we have a piece of legislation that's going to be implemented both state and local, or local, state, and nationally, and over at least a period of years, that we don't have to worry about going back to waivers or having it reauthorized next year and change the focus. So having that consistency and, frankly, some bipartisanship, I think are kind of 30,000-foot things, but I think they are they're important. The other thing that it's done is it's shifted. You know, some people have portrayed it as, you know, this is a states' rights issue. Everything's been turned over to state. Well, this is still a federal program, and we get $200+ million out of it.
Is there more money in ESA? No, there isn't.
Okay. And the budgetary piece is always separate from reauthorization.
That's through the funding process,
right?
Of Congress.
And so that'll remain the same, or I suppose ostensibly go down. But the what it does is it kind of shares some decision making, and for one thing, it allows this instead of turnaround programs for schools that are underperforming the bottom 5%, they had four or five specific things that had to be done. Well, those no longer exist. There's no required turnaround model, so to speak. But in turn, what it does is it gives the state and those school districts that are having these lower performance the ability to kind of negotiate what's going to work well for them in their school district. And I think that's a step forward, frankly.
But I just heard you say something that I hadn't heard before. Does ESSA, does it focus on the 5%? And help me understand this 5% new guideline.
Well, it's what we do with that 5%.
And the 5% are what?
The lowest achieving schools and on our school report card.
And I just want to be sure I get it right. The lowest achieving by graduation rates, by SAT scores, by standardized testing, what?
Yes.
Yes to all three.
It's part of our accountability system. Utilizes ACT, graduation, of course, a large part of it is our standardized tests in reading and mathematics, and not only how well schools and districts are achieving, but how are they doing in closing those achievement gaps. So all that in the mix is still there. What is wholly different is the federal government won't be giving, they used to have school improvement grants.
Mm-hmm.
They no longer do that. They just say X percent, and I think it's 7% of your allocation should be used for helping schools in those lower categories. We can determine with collaboration of those school districts and schools what that change is going to look like instead of having that compelled by the federal government.
Well, New York Times columnist David Kerp said this about ESSA. Every Student Succeeds Act shifts, for the first time since the Reagan years, the balance of power in education away from Washington and back to the states. Do you agree?
There's a shift. I wouldn't say it's like now
It's not a sea change?
No, that's sea changes. You know, has there been any change recently to shift that? No, this does. And so I guess one could consider that a sea change. For example, they no longer require, the federal government is no longer requiring our educator evaluation system period. I mean, before we had to, it was required under federal law that we have them. It's required under federal law that some characteristics should look the same on that. That's gone away.
That's gone?
That's gone.
Teacher evaluations are gone?
As required by the federal government.
Okay, thank you. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal, but it's in state law here in Wisconsin. And so I don't see a lot of change in that. I mean, people may want, I mean, now at the state level, if the policymakers are interested, make some tweaks to that. But I just don't see that changing much in our state, because that system was developed by teachers and principals and policymakers. And so there's broad support for it. I mean, it's not without problems, but so I don't see that changing. But it is, the federal government is no longer requiring that. Simple as that.
That is a
federal government is no longer telling us what failing schools, to use a poor term, need to do in order to turn themselves around. There used to be like four or five turnaround models that they've sanctioned. Now that's no longer there. So I think there is a shift, but a sea change, that might be a bit hyperbole.
Does it give you, as a DPI superintendent, more authority? Does it give the governors of the state more authority? Does it give our...
Depends on the state. Our state, as you know, I'm an independent elected official, so that authority...
Constitutional officer.
Yeah, that still authority still rests with me and ESSA. But we, as we always do, collaborate with our partners on the Hill to make sure that everybody knows what's going on. But in other states, when the state superintendent is appointed by the governor, clearly that's going to give the governor some different authorities. But again, there's just certain things that are already in state law. For instance, our accountability plan that is required, was required, and is still to some extent required by the federal government. They've given more flexibility. It's also in our state law also. So it's not like we're going to be, it's not going to be a sea change. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. What about the issue of testing? Will there be less standardized testing under every student succeeds?
No. That remains essentially unchanged. They give states some authority to investigate other ways of going about it, but there still is a requirement to have a single standardized test in grades 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and once in high school. So that hasn't changed. And frankly, I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with that. We need to, once a year, do a check on how we're doing as a state and individual schools do. I think some of the problem with the standardized tests in the past is that everybody's kind of oversold it, like it's going to be, parents are going to know exactly what interventions are going to be needed for their child in order to succeed. And that's what standardized tests are for. Essentially, it's a dipstick. Once a year, look at how a school or your own child is doing. It's not for the purposes of changing instructional strategies the next day. So yes, we will, make a long story short, we still will be doing standardized tests here in Wisconsin.
If I'm a parent, if I have one child in middle school and one child in high school, I was being told under No Child Left Behind whether my schools were failing, correct?
Right.
I'm no longer going to be given those evaluations in those terms, correct?
It'll be on the terms of our present report cards, which are described in different terms, but they don't say failing.
Well,
but those report cards will still happen. I mean, there won't be much change in it. Parents will still, whether the term is failing or underperforming or whatever, Fs.
But that's for the school.
Right.
Have I been getting the test scores of my child in middle school and high school in math, in English?
Yes.
Have I been getting that?
Yes.
Okay. Am I going to continue to get that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that will happen. That happened last year with my grandkids. They got their report at home, and that will continue. But but also schools will have their report cards under state law, and so those descriptors will be available to parents too.
As a veteran K-12 educator, what do you believe, how closely do parents follow both whether their school is failing or whether and how their children are doing on some of those standardized tests?
I think they follow it pretty good. I mean, I think there are some parents that think there's over-testing, but that's a bigger discussion about not only are 3 hours of standardized testing, but other tests given throughout the year. But yeah, I think parents pay attention to it, and I think school districts value and value the importance of our school report cards. I mean, we hear about it when a district goes from one category mm-hmm. to another every year, so mm-hmm. obviously someone cares.
What does Every Student Succeeds do, if anything, additionally for some of our, for the Milwaukee school districts, the Madison school districts, with their, you say, I don't have to tell you about the dropout rates.
Right. Yeah, and just achievement, period, gaps.
Yes.
They're significant in this state. What it's going to do, and this goes back to what I said before, that 7% of money that we that will be set aside from the total allocation will go to the most significantly underperforming schools, whether they're in Madison or Milwaukee or any place else. And that will help. I think we've got lots of other interesting and good things going on that can help us close those achievement gaps. But the No Child Left Behind, or ESSA.
ESSA.
I'm going to have to work on that. Continues to focus on the achievement gaps and making sure that all kids, especially economically disadvantaged and other kids, have a fair shake. That's actually the kind of heartwarming thing I have around ESSA is that it was actually the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and it was passed at the same time all the Civil Rights Acts were passed in the early 60s, 63, mm-hmm. 64, the voting rights. And so it's always been considered a civil rights bill in actuality, and still is. So I think that's an important history to recognize, because there are some people that are fearful that the states will not hold school districts as accountable as they were in the past because of this flexibility. And there might be some pressure to do that. I don't think there's going to be any pressure to do that in Wisconsin. I think it's really important that we continue. Educators believe that we should be held accountable, and we'll continue to do that.
What does Every Student Succeeds do to the Common Core debate, Tony?
In my opinion, nothing. I mean, there still may be debate about it. The Department of Education never required anybody to, they just require rigorous standards, and who can be against that? So the debate really is kind of a state-by-state issue. What ESSA does is it prohibits the department from requiring any standards, and they haven't in the past, so it's just kind of a proactive thing. So the discussion, in my viewpoint, we have 423 school districts that are now implementing the Common Core. They have the final authority. The legislature has not intervened, and the only way they could intervene is to say, local school districts, you don't know what you're doing, we know better. I just don't see that happening, and so I think what we're trying to do is to kind of set up procedures and transparency, so going forward that everybody feels involved in the process, and we'll be probably releasing that that system in a few weeks.
What's the timeline for Every Student Succeeds? Is it 2 years out, or?
If I remember correctly, it's the beginning of the 2017-18 school year. So it's a 1,000-page document, more than a 1,000-page document. So I can guarantee you, and this is no slam on those legislators, but there's no way any of them knows what's in the 1,000 pages. So now it's up for us to kind of discern that, along with our helpful friends at the federal government. So there's all sorts of rulemaking and other things that are going to happen between now and implementation. We're so far from really knowing exactly what's in that bill. Small example, and something I'm frankly happy about, but for years the Military Families Associations have been pushing for an identifier for individual kids that come from military families.
Because they're often moved around.
They're often moved around, and they want to know how their kids and how that lifestyle impacts their kids' learning. Well, put in a budget, and I didn't know anything about it. I'm happy, but that is now a requirement that states have an identifier for military kids and homeless kids. So, and those things are really relatively large things, and for someone, and there's no one in our department that knew that that was going to happen either. So we have to get through those 1,000 pages and find out what's exactly in there.
Okay, I understand it's 1,000 pages, and there's the Department of Ed has to do rules. It'd have to be public hearings and approved and all that.
Yep.
Now let's talk about the process. Under Every Student Succeeds, then do you draft a plan to implement it, and do you forward that to the governor? What's the role of the governor and lawmakers here in terms of the next steps?
Our Title I process does involve some conversations with the governor's office, and we'll have that when we get that plan. But we're many months away from developing that plan. And the plan's going to pretty much reflect what the law says. So I don't think there's going to be anything extraordinarily controversial in the plan. But yes, we have some obligations to share it with the governor's office and the governor himself.
What are the new major policy decisions that the governor and lawmakers will have to make as a result of Every Student Succeeds?
They will need to know that, they will need to understand that we have already in place pieces of statute that deal with some really important things around teacher evaluation and our accountability system. And we plan to encourage continued dialogue around that so that if there are any changes in that system. But they also need to know that we're going to stay the course on standardized tests. That's required. So they need to understand the law. I don't believe our Title I plan and our Title II plan is going to raise any particular eyebrows because they're going to need to follow what the federal government wants.
Does Every Student Succeeds, does it do anything with charter schools?
To my best of my knowledge, no. But there's several pieces of legislation that have been kept the same. One is community learning centers, kind of the after-school things. That's in there. But the charter school grant program, I believe, I'm sure it's still in there. It's a competitive grant and always has been, always will be.
Okay, based on what you know about Every Student Succeeds, what do Wisconsin teachers need to know? Will there be anything different?
In their world, probably not.
No?
Yeah, probably not. If indeed we were starting from scratch on teacher evaluation and starting scratch from our accountability system, no, then it would be something different. But I don't anticipate this reauthorization necessarily impacting everyday life in a teacher's world.
What about parents of K-12 students?
They'll still see the same kind of tests that in their worldview, and in my worldview as a grandparent, you want to see how they do on the standardized tests. You want to make sure that we're closing achievement gaps as a state, and so all those things that are important to parents will continue to be important.
And if Every Student Succeeds is a success, 5 and 6 years out, what's going to be different in Wisconsin schools?
Well, I think we will take a look at our accountability system to probably add some things to it that haven't been part of it before. Right now, it's basically based on graduation rate, ACT, and math and English language arts tests.
Mm-hmm.
I would like, and I know others around the state, and when the governor and I and Senator Olson convened that accountability task force a couple years ago, we all kind of knew that this was a starting point. You know, we really do need to take a look at how we're allowing kids to be career ready. The whole career and technical education piece is just flat out missing out of that. And also a lot of other stuff that we feel is important, such all those soft skills with people skills, such as getting along with people, team building, entrepreneurship. We need to have a good discussion around that. I'm not sure there's lots of measurements of those things, but there might be. And so I just think it would be good for us as a state to take a look at maybe there's some things we can put on that report card that will allow it to be reflective of the values of Wisconsin. I think right now it's pretty narrow, and I think it could be broader and more meaningful.
One of the criticisms of No Child Left Behind is that it was so driven by standardized testing that things like art, music, Phi-Ed didn't get emphasized.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that criticism?
Well, there is a potential for that, yes. I'm not sure it's happened. I would say some of the areas that you mentioned, music, art, and Phi-Ed, probably have been impacted more directly by budget cuts than by No Child Left Behind. But there is, and that's why I wanted to see that report card expanded, because, yes, do we want kids to be literate in math and good readers? Absolutely. But there's all sorts of other things we want for them. And I think those other things should be reflected in that report card. If it's in our accountability system, then there's more guarantees that there will be this broad-based type of learning that most parents and grandparents like me want.
Every 2 years, you ask the governor and lawmakers for a new school funding formula.
Right.
Does every student succeeds give you one more reason to argue for a new funding formula, or is it apples and oranges?
To some extent, it's apples and oranges.
Okay.
I think the issue, you know, if ESSA in subsequent years was drastically cut in half, then that would make a huge argument. But I think the argument we make around adequate resources and a different funding system hold true regardless of the federal commitment.
I'm going to get your update. DPI is still in the process of picking another. You have recommended another vendor for our next standardized test, right?
Right.
Where is that in the process?
That's a done deal. Right. I'm trying to think of the Data Resources Corporation out of Minneapolis,
right.
And there's some. They have some offices here. We'll be doing the next test for the next couple of years.
And you've heard the criticism. It's headed by former Republican Senator Susan Shannon Engelreiter. Do you want to respond to that?
Sure. I've known Susan Engelreiter for when she was Senate Majority Leader, so I have no problem with that. She and her colleagues have created a well-regarded company and have served many states well, so I anticipate no problems with that.
So going from No Child Left Behind to Every Student Succeeds is a welcome change.
Yes, absolutely. There's going to be consistency. We're going to be continuing doing some things we do well. We're going to have some flexibility to do some things differently. Is it a sea change? Not sure about that. But the fact of the matter is, if it hadn't been changed, it would have continued down a path that no one wants to go down.
And if it succeeds, will Wisconsin still have the largest achievement gap in the nation, sir?
I don't know. We will not. We cannot. I mean, that just, and will ESSA help us on that? Yes, but there's some other stuff that we're going to be working on that we have to close those achievement gaps. It's absolutely mandatory.
So your agency now is going through the 1,000 pages,
yep.
And do you have to submit a plan to DO, to the feds?
Yes.
Okay. Does the governor and lawmakers have to sign off on the, or is this your initiative?
The governor will, I mean, if the governor said, I don't like this plan, we would still submit it. I mean, it's my authority. We will ask the governor to sign off on it, and hopefully he'll agree to do that.
And your deadline to submit that plan is years away?
It's at least a year away, I'm sure.
Okay. Yeah. So every student succeeds, good change.
Yep, absolutely.
Superintendent Tony Evers, thanks very much for coming
thank
in
you,
to give
Steve.
Us an overview. I realize it's early, but thank you very much.
It's a good starting place. Thank you.
Thank you.